Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 141. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I think I've got the right blend of coffee and energy drink this morning to just power through and just pick up and get a lot done.
Ooh, wait a minute. You blend coffee and energy drink? That's
No. Separate. I started with an energy drink and then had like half a cup of coffee. No. This isn't like, you know, putting B52 in the coffee pot to mellow it out or anything.
Three espressos, two monsters. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's intense. And then do you ever have a crash after that, or do you go, you're good? Does that last you for a certain amount of time, or?
Well, you stagger them, because remember, caffeine's primary half-life is, I think, 8 hours, and then withdrawal generally sets at 11. So if you do at least like a 3 or 4 hour split, and then just don't drink any caffeine after like 11 o'clock, you should be fine, and you'll time your crash and your primary withdrawal right around now. Anyway, there's a lot of thought that goes into the method of...
More on coffee addiction on the private episode with John Nicholson, to be determined. I like it.
Java.
I love it. Well, John, this is going to be a fun episode. I know I say that a lot, but I truly mean that. I think this is a bit of a one-off episode. I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine, Mr. Frank Dennerman, and he was telling me about this really cool project that he's been working on, which I want to ask him about. And then the conversation got a little bit bigger. We started talking about something that I think applies to everybody in the IT industry, and that's learning how to learn, you know, the art of learning, you know, being a better learner and what it takes. And so I think most people that are in IT would definitely fall into that category. So I thought it might make for a good conversation. And so I wanted to bring Frank on. Frank's been on a bunch of times. Everybody knows Frank. Let's bring him to the mic. Mr. Frank Dennerman, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. How you been this new year? Happy New Year, by the way.
Yeah, Happy New Year. It's been a wild start of the year. I've published a script about the stuff that I've been working on, just said in the intro. And coming back to the intro, John, there's this really hilarious review on Amazon talking about 5-hour energy. And there's this one guy who got a big gulp and filled it entirely with 5-hour energy. You should check it out.
You can die of caffeine overdose. Yeah. This is a real thing.
Well, one of the comments that he made was, "I can taste colors." So that says enough, right?
If you like 5-hour energy, you can get a case of the off-brand from Costco incredibly cheap. And that may or may not be what's pulsing through my veins right now.
Wow. Crazy. All right. Well, listen, we want to learn, but not about how to overdose on caffeine. Let's talk about just the art of learning. Frank, I want to start with, because I think this is what, you know, prompted this conversation. Tell us a little bit about what you were doing over the break and what you decided to tackle.
Yeah. So one of my areas of interest or areas of responsibility is about new workloads and new hardware. So one of the things that everybody is talking about is, of course, machine learning, deep learning, and all that stuff. And the interesting thing is that we're not using the traditional hardware like a CPU and memory, but we're shifting towards GPUs and other types of accelerators like FPGAs. Now, the interesting thing is that it connects, it's still inside a machine in a server, same as vSAN is local. Like you have your accelerator flash and you have your capacity flash. It's the same thing with ML. You're going to offload your data processing onto a GPU, but it has to flow from the application through the CPU and memory into the GPU. And that's where the interconnects come into play. And there's this locality area where you want to keep the distance between the CPU and the GPU as short as possible. Sometimes it's for the application itself, so you get a better response time. But in our scenario, in virtualization, it's all about keeping the noisy neighbors actually down to a minimum. And picture this, where you have like this gigantic data set flowing from one CPU to a GPU that is connected to another CPU, because that's something what a lot of people tend to forget, that GPUs are hardwired against to a socket.
Yeah.
Right. So you have all this data flowing through your system while other systems, other virtual machines and other schedulers are trying to use that interconnect, that connection between those CPUs as well. So I was looking at some of the benchmarks for machine learning, and I spoke with the CPU engineers and I'm explaining, like, should we take this into account, the PCIe locality of a particular GPU? And the engineer basically went back like, okay, just show me what the impact is. Okay, so I started to work on it and I'm like, but I have to figure out how it's actually hardwired. And we don't have that information ready to go, ready to be presented in an ESX top or whatever. And for me, that was the starting point of thinking, this is the stuff that I can use to actually learn a programming language or actually try to use a scripting language or whatever, because that's something that I actually haven't looked into. I always thought, like, with PowerCLI, it is very useful, but I don't do admin work anymore. Right? So I can go and read Luke's blog post or watch Kyle Ruddy's presentations at VMworld and all that stuff and all the other scripters that do a tremendous job. But the reality is I don't have a use case for it. So I can learn the basics, but the moment I step away from my keyboard, I forget most of it already. So I needed to have some use case for me to learn this stuff. And this project was, in my opinion, a good way to actually understand how to properly use PowerCLI. And I looked at Perl and I looked at other stuff, but that was just one bridge too far. Look, I'm 43 years old. I'm not the youngest anymore. I do a lot of traveling. From a personal note, I am a migraine patient, so I don't have like a full week's worth of brain capacity. If I have a bad day, that means my learning slows down, right?
So I have to
learn it in a particular window. And of course, I have my private life and all that stuff. So I thought, this is brilliant. And then you start with, okay, how do I actually do this? How do I actually learn this stuff? How do I start learning PowerCLI? And that was an interesting beginning, I believe.
Well, it's interesting that you use those two words that I noticed you used. It was a good starting point to learn. And then you also said that it was a good beginning. And to me, I think for most people, that might be the end. You know, like you get to a certain point and you see that chasm of where you want to be. And getting over there is just way too much time. I don't have the time. I don't have the resources. I don't have the expertise. So forget it and then move on. So, which to me prompted this curiosity in this conversation, like how we as humans in general learn to learn, because you looked at that as an opportunity, whereas many people may have looked at that as end of the road.
Yeah. I think that has to do with, at one point, passion and desire, that you actually want to do this. If you don't have the passion or desire to learn it, you won't go far by definition, right? It's almost like going back to school with the homework type thing. I was on a Sunday night, I did all the homework, preferably at 10 o'clock in the night, where if you look at the rest of the day, how I spend the rest of the day, it was basically doing the weirdest stuff to avoid doing homework, right? Because there was absolutely no passion. But with this makes you feel like, okay, let's try to do this. And of course, it's not simple, especially because there is no guidance to take you into this language.
There's you can't Google that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of information out there. There's an extreme amount of information, but does it actually apply to what you're learning? So you have to filter it. And one of the things that you start to discover is, what is the lingo, right? What type of term do I need to use in order to get the result into Google that's actually accurate and that's actually understandable for you? So what you're starting to do is you have this big problem, what you're trying to solve. But one of the easiest steps is try to think about, what is the essence of what I'm trying to solve here? And how can I make this bigger problem into chunks of smaller problems? I think that is something that allows you to start somewhere. right? It's the same thing with exercise. If you start to exercise, if you want to get back into shape, you cannot do a marathon on the first day. You need to start to basically exercise, to walk. Just walk around the block. And that's slowly you're progressing and progressing. That's the same thing with learning as well. So you have this big problem, try to chop it up into smaller problems. And what you're basically going to recognize is that you need to chop it up again into smaller problems. At one point, you get to a point where you actually can solve something. And that's your starting point. And that's basically your anchor point into, okay, now let's build it out, right? So the ambition is there, but you don't have to be overly ambitious trying to solve it all in the first day.
Sounds like the analogy of, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You know, it takes a while, but if you look at the whole elephant, that's way too, you know, intimidating, and it's like you'll give up. But if you take it a bite at a time, go ahead, John.
Well, and I just like, you know, one that you start with, rather than saying, okay, I want to learn Python or I want to learn, you know, a specific outcome just in a vacuum, you start with a problem. I think most people in their career learn a lot of the skills because they had a challenge and they had something they needed to accomplish. There was a server down or there was a project or you needed to deploy something. And so that was the foundation of learning. But yeah, that next part of breaking it down into the smaller bites and breaking down those into, and also understanding how to search for those and find those information rather than say, okay, I want this outcome where I audit, where, you know, if you just Google, how do I automate stress testing noisy neighbors on GPUs? You're going to get no results or some really weird stuff, probably from a sketchy.ru domain that says free information here. Please click here, Frank.
Yeah.
but if you know how to break that down and say, okay, how to, you know, CLI or how to generate a GPU workload, like benchmark GPU, and then break it down into, okay, how to automate some VMs and how to break them to smaller chunks. In a previous life, I used to be a hiring manager. And one of the questions we would ask had to do with some kind of really obtuse, complicated things with Active Directory and exporting the raw LDAP and hand editing stuff. And the purpose why we would ask that question is so we could watch people Google. I mean, do they use Google? Do they use Bing? If they use Bing, like, get the hell out of my, you know, interview. But the idea of learning how to learn and watching that process is really what drives, I feel like, a lot of the creativeness.
Yeah. So if we take my example, as a use case. So I knew there was this GPU inside a server. I didn't know how many. So that was another problem, right? How can I create this script that is independent of the number of GPUs? So if a customer uses this script and they have like four GPUs in the server, they can still use this, right? So that was one of the problems. How can I have this variable number inside my script? That is a very interesting problem to tackle inside of Power CLI. And if you are going to look at Power CLI, there are basically three steps. First of it is actually obtaining the information.
Get, right, yeah.
Then it's storing the information, and then it's getting it out to present it in the way you want it. So these three things are already by themselves a challenge, a big challenge, right? So, okay, let's start with getting the information. Okay, so I knew there was a GPU. I knew the way to identify GPUs by PCIe address. Okay, that's cool. So now the next thing I needed to know is which GPU is connected to which CPU. Now I knew it was somewhere inside the VSI shell, in the VM kernel shell interface. I looked it up. I searched for it. I contacted my pal Valentin. He said, yeah, it should be there, because at one point I'm like, I'm searching. I cannot find it. He said, I'm pretty sure it's there. Take a look at that branch. And I got these numbers and I'm like, okay. And there were like 40 numbers in it. I'm like, this is going to take a while. And I found at one point, I found it in one number. I found a label that says Numanode. So I'm like, okay, it's in there, but how do I actually correlate that PCIe address to this decimal number? And right. I'm like, oh, PCIe addresses are hexadecimal. So I had to convert a hexadecimal into a decimal number value. So I had to figure out in Power CLI, how do you do that? Okay, found it. Okay, that's the next step. So now I actually had this decimal value. Basically, look it up in the VSI shell, found it. Perfect. So I actually had the PCI address. I had now the NUM address. But the thing is, in order to operate a VSI shell command, you have to do it from the shell itself. Power CLI is everything but logging into a particular host. Mm. So how do you do that? So, and you go on and you go on and you go on. And then if you have all the information, how do you store it for each machine, for each GPU, and especially for each virtual machine that is connected to that particular device as well? So that was a challenge, but slowly you get into a particular rhythm and you find your information. And then I think the biggest thing is set aside your ego. Of course, everybody wants to solve it by themselves. The thing is, that's going to take a while.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And there's a lot of people that are willing to help, that are knowledgeable to help. And as long as you don't make it into a one-way street, meaning that if somebody helps you, you have to help them back at one point, right? That makes a true difference. So I have Kyle Ruddy and Luke D on speed dial, luckily.
Yeah, but the problem with that is like that's not scalable, right? So like every single person that's trying to troubleshoot that doesn't have Kyle Ruddy.
Kyle is a non-renewable resource that we must preserve exactly. for future generations.
No, but the thing is there's still this ego that says, I want to solve this myself. Yeah. But at one point you basically hit this brick wall and I just emailed Luke and Kyle said, look, I want to solve this. Give me hints.
Yeah, where don't do give I me the answer.
is this doable or not? Right. And so I got around the system and they helped me point into particular direction, or they gave me a example like this is how you can solve it like this. And then I actually had to translate it into my particular problem domain.
I like it. Well, the beauty of this is that here's something that doesn't seem like anybody had been doing. It certainly wasn't. There was this big chasm of getting the information that you needed. You had to one learn Power CLI, but then not only that, really analyze the data that nobody had truly documented. The fact that these are in different languages, reach out to community or whoever else to get some guidance to put you in the right direction, and then ultimately learn something new and be able to solve this. But the beauty of all that is in doing so, your payback was to write a blog post about it. And so now this information is documented and people can, now we talk about Googling. There is, you might have one blog post that comes up when it comes to, trying to understand a little bit about, GPUs and doing Neumann node locality. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the real fun is when you try to Google something and you find your own blog and you're like, I forgot I wrote that 3 years ago.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You basically into the second paragraph and you're like, this sounds familiar. And the writing style looks familiar as well. And then you haven't actually checked the URL and then you figure out, that's actually my blog.
No, I've gone even worse in the fact I've Googled something, found out I wrote it, and then still had to learn because I was like, all right, well, now I found it. I've come to terms with the fact that this is my blog, but I don't remember it. So now I have to read my blog to teach myself again what I did. The human brain. But yeah, on the art of learning, when we first had this conversation, it made me think about, people learn differently, right? Like people, this is why I think some people are in IT and some people are in other career fields. But I do think that this subset of humans that choose to be in IT, in some form of IT, are people that are curious and that do find ways to learn and maybe take on things that are a little bit more intimidating to other folks, right? How does this work? A lot of the guys and girls that are in this career field are going to take a computer apart, are going to try and figure out how this thing works. They're going to start to maybe work with some automation, some scripts, whereas other folks might find that way too intimidating. So I think we have the right audience. But you prompted me to do some research on how people learn. And I do want to share, there's a really cool TED Talk called Learning to Learn. It's by a woman, Barbara Oakley. Excellent TED Talk on just the art of learning. And one of the things that I thought she shared, which really rang true for me, and I want your opinion, is she said that there are keys to learning effectively. There are two different modes that the brain has. There's focused mode, when we're truly, we go off what we already know and we apply that to try and learn something. And then the other mode that the brain goes in is called diffuse mode. And that's when we actually relax. Have you guys ever had that experience where you're banging your head against the wall, you're trying to figure something out and you can't figure it out, and then maybe you go to sleep or you go and do something else completely different, and then you walk back to your computer and it's the answer is like staring at you? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah. And you can solve it by either walking, but one of the most insane things to know is that actually a shower helps. So there are these brain waves, and there are particular brain waves, and it's a theta wave. And the moment when you shower, a lot of people have these conversations with themselves in the shower, these makeup conversations that if this occurs, I'm going to say this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a part of the theta phase. And that's the phase where you basically start to come up with ideas and how to problem solve and all that stuff. That's the way I understood it. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but that helps as well. And typically it's just basically focusing on something else and then returning. If you do 8 hours of just focusing on your screen, you're not basically helping yourself. And I think that's actually the biggest problem with working from home, because the moment you work from home, you're more eager to provide and to produce stuff. So you spend more time behind your computer than when you do it when you're at the office. In the office, you walk around, you go to the coffee machine, you bump into somebody, you talk about some of the stuff. You go to lunch. That takes a little bit longer than working from home, right? So you tend to be staring at your computer for longer periods of time. Typically, it doesn't help at all.
Oh, see, I had a slightly different opinion on that. I thought it might be beneficial with the work from home, because I have I literally have a couch in my office. So when I'm banging my head against the wall for a while, I might walk around, get a coffee downstairs, might sit on this couch and relax for a minute. And I don't know that I would feel at liberty to do that at work. You know, when I was in the main office, you know, you'd see some people that would just be, you know, hanging around the games or doing that thing. And you think, man, does this guy have a job? You know, there's this fear of judgment that I feel like being in corporate America would sort of, that sort of has this thing. It's like, you don't want to be the guy that's not working. I don't know. There's a bit of intimidation there, right? But I feel like when you're at least at home, you have that freedom to, you know, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, no matter whether you're doing it at work or whether you're working from home, taking a break and going into that diffuse mode, if you will, like just not pushing at it the entire time, I think is a big key to actually learning, is letting your brain, you know, take a minute, think of something else. And then once you refresh, it seems to be a very helpful tactic.
Oh yeah, for sure. And especially one of the good things of work from home is actually the lack of this disruption, right? You basically sit behind your desk. There's no colleague coming up to you at your desk. If that's the case, something is wrong with your house situation. But when I start working, I put on my headphones and I just completely lock in. I do that even at home, right? So put on my music list and lock in.
But some people say music distracts them, and some people say it helps them. I'm curious, John and Frank, what are your, is music, does it music help or does it distract?
It has to be like very specific kinds of music. So if it's something with a lot of deep words or meaning, I'm going to have issues. If it's chill hop or something that's more designed to truly be background music, that's my jam.
So I have created this playlist that basically consist of numbers that are deep house, so less vocals, all about rhythms and beats, and that helps me to concentrate. And there's no distraction of lyrics, because one thing that you don't want to have is when you write something is that there's somebody talking in your ear all the time, right?
Yep.
So I made this playlist just for that. And it's 27 hours long. Not that I'm working 27 hours long straight, but yeah, it helps me get through that list.
Can we get the Spotify list for the, or whatever this list is, for the show notes, Pete?
Oh, yeah. Well, my other question for you, and true, John, we're going to do that. I do want to get the link to that, and I want to share that. I know that you, I think I already have it, but I think we need to share that, because I think it is a great playlist. The other thing is, there's this other concept that Barbara Oakley was talking about. It's called Pomodoro. It's the idea of having 25 minutes of focused attention, not being distracted by, you know, whether it's being on Twitter, whether it's checking your text, whether it's, you know, whatever you're doing, just 25 minutes of just focusing on a specific thing actually contributes to learning as opposed to putting everything up around you. Do you guys ever do that? Do you block out? I only do it sometimes, like if I'm writing or certain times. I think I need to do it more. But do you guys ever just try to specifically focus on paying attention and not being distracted by other email and other things?
Yeah, basically put my headphones on and you get into that flow, right? And one of the things that you don't want to do is you don't want to have Slack open, WhatsApp open, Outlook open, TweetDeck open, all that stuff. So basically, whenever I'm going at a particular problem, that window is closed. I use a large screen, and I have divided that screen into three different panels. And the moment I go into focus mode, one of that panel just basically goes down and I don't see it. So that leaves me focused on the things at hand.
Yeah, this is where I know that humans are different because John, for example, John's a highly productive individual, but man, he gets on Slack and he can answer questions all day. I see him answering questions on like four different platforms. You know, I'll go online and be like, somebody was asking a question. Oh, John answered that question. Oh, John, yeah, but John contributed to that.
My content creation really gets compacted into a very short amount of my day. Like, but I try to block that out. I'll be like, okay, this 3 hours or this 2 hours, I'm going to write this blog start to finish.
Yeah.
I've already done the initial research, or I'm going to spend an hour and do the initial research. I'll dump that into my Markdown editor and then get the skeleton. And then 3 hours, you know, tomorrow in the morning, I'm going to block that out and I'm going to disable Slack. Sometimes I'll go so extreme as to actually have an alternative host file that poisons my DNS against Twitter and like every possible distraction. No. I mean, this is a thing. Like,
wow.
Like I'm actually looking at implementing this on my PyHolt where I can just like have a block list of like disable fun distractions. And but it part of it is you know, I've gotten so extreme of just turn off the if it's truly something I can write and I've already have all my references open, I've already copied them all in, it's like turn off the Wi-Fi and then it's just bam, like tunnel vision. But it's got to be something I'm passionate about. It's like someone asks a question of like, what size should my VMDK be? I've got this and I'm like, how about I just, can I get a blog out for that in just an hour, you know, in an hour and get that blogger and then bam and done? Because I had a passion. I had a bunch of ideas flowing. I was in the zone. I was ready to go. I'd taken my shower, whatever, my theta waves were aligned.
I like it. So, yeah, I think this is the beginning of a larger conversation. I like the concept of, you know, but I truly believe because I've always been told, and I'm guessing that you guys have been told the same. Anytime you're in IT, people suddenly have a different opinion of you, like, oh, you must be one of those nerds that are really smart about all these computer things. But I don't subscribe to that. I truly believe that any profession that you apply yourself in, you're going to get good at anything and you're going to learn. And I think there are ways to learn. As a matter of fact, that TED talk I was talking about, the woman mentioned that she had failed math all the way through from elementary, junior high school and high school. She failed math all the time. She was just really bad at math. Fast forward in life, she's a computer science engineer and you know, and she's amazing at math now, but she taught herself how to learn differently. And so I don't know. I subscribe to the fact that anybody who applies themselves can figure out, you know, with some tools, some of the ones that we mentioned, but can be effective learners more so than they may be doing today.
Totally agree. So taking myself an example, same thing. I never was good at math, calculus during my school career, if you put it like that.
Yeah.
Up to the point where I wrote a few books about distributed algorithms called DRS. So you actually, when you talk to those engineers, you have to understand math pretty well. So yeah, the moment you are focused and you want to learn something, the moment you're eager, that's the moment where you will apply yourself. And I think another thing, like what you said about that TED talk, there's this book from Angela Duckworth called Grit. And I think that's another thing as well.
Yeah.
Success is not a straight line. It's not smooth sailing at all. So you will hit a few walls along the way. And that's the moment where you basically, when you have passion and grit, apply yourself, be better. It's not about being the best. It's about being better than yesterday. That's it.
It's like John always says, be best. That's like John's catchphrase, right, John?
Yes.
But if you just be better than yourself that you were yesterday, that's where you progress, right? And that's what you can do. And that's what you need to do, I believe. In our community, look at what we need to learn. If you want to be an expert on everything right now, you're insane. If you look at what we're dealing with from a platform perspective, from a location perspective, from a service perspective, the way we're dealing with customers, the way we're dealing it with other partners, right? So if you're building a VMware platform and now you need to use Google Cloud Platform or AWS or whatever, you need to understand that. But do you need to be an expert in this? Especially if you look at AWS and you look at the reInvent and all the announcements that they make.
Yeah.
Can you be an AWS expert? No, you can't, right? But you have to understand a little bit of it. And that's where you have to understand what do I need to know from my profession? And what do I want to learn from a passion perspective? They go hand in hand, I believe.
Sweet. I like it. I think that's a good place to sort of start to wrap up. This is certainly not an answer to a question as big as this, but I am, you know, I'm glad to get your perspective on this, Frank. I'm curious for those listening, how do you learn? Also, how do you teach? Like, what are your tips? And I'd love to hear that feedback back. Send us anything, whether it's email at podcast@vmware.com or you can hit us up on Twitter at @vertspeaking. But I'm very curious to hear some of the other tactics that people use to be better learners, you know, because I know there's plenty of them out there. You know, community resources, whether it's, you know, books that you've read, things you've seen, whether it's, you know, things that you've always known your whole life on how to be better at learning. I'm curious about all of that. So please, by all means, send that stuff in. Frank, thanks for taking this one-off podcast with us. I know we usually focus on specific technologies, but I think this type of content is also equally as valuable to the community in general.
Always a pleasure.
Good stuff. John, anything else before we take off?
I'm profoundly dumbfounded.
Yeah, you are, man.
I'm done with high theta activity for the day. Just completely done. I think it's time we land this plane and
I need to go take a shower.
Yeah, go take a shower.
Take a shower so I can be, you know, so I can be best. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to our good friend Frank Denneman for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.